The following is a Srimad Bhagavatam class, 7th canto, 6th chapter, text number 1, given by Srila Ravindasarup Das on June 13, 1991, in Philadelphia.
We're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 7, chapter 6. We're starting chapter 6 today. Prahlad instructs his demoniac schoolmates, and this is the first text. Before we do the text, let me read the chapter summary that Prabhupada took. In speaking to his friends, who are all sons of demons, Prahlad Maharaj stressed that every living entity, especially in human society, must be interested in spiritual realization from the very beginning of life. When human beings are children, they should be taught that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the worshipable deity for everyone. One should not be very much interested in material enjoyment. Instead, one should be satisfied with whatever material profits are easily obtainable, because the duration of one's life is very short. One should utilize every moment for spiritual advancement. One may wrongly think, in the beginning of our lives, let us enjoy material facilities, and in old age, we may become Krishna conscious. Such materialistic thoughts are always useless, because in old age one cannot be trained in the spiritual way of life. Therefore, from the very beginning of life, one should engage in devotional service, shravanam kirtanam vishnu. That is the duty of all living entities. Material education is infected by the three modes of nature, but spiritual education, for which there is a great need in human society, is transcendental. Prahlad Maharaj disclosed the secret of how he had received instructions from Narada Muni. By accepting the lotus feet of Prahlad Maharaj, who is in the Parampara succession, one will be able to understand the mode of spiritual life. In accepting this mode of activity, there is no need for material qualifications. After Prahlad Maharaj's class friends had listened to Prahlad Maharaj, they inquired how he had become so learned and advanced. In this way, the chapter ends. That's a summary. So now, text number 1. Translation. Prahlad Maharaj said, "One who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary, like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection." Srila Prabhupada's purport. The whole purpose of Vedic civilization and of reading the Vedas is to attain the perfect stage of devotional service in the human form of life. According to the Vedic system, therefore, from the very beginning of life, the Brahmacharya system is introduced, so that from one's very childhood, from the age of 5 years, one can practice modifying one's human activities so as to engage perfectly in devotional service. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 2.40, Svalpam api asya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Modern civilization, not referring to the verdicts of Vedic literature, is so cruel to the members of human society that instead of teaching children to become brahmacharis, it teaches mothers to kill their children, even in the womb, on the plea of curbing the increase of population. And if, by chance, a child is saved, he is educated only for sense gratification. Gradually, throughout the entire world, human society is losing interest in the perfection of life. Indeed, men are living like cats and dogs, spoiling the duration of their human lives by actually preparing to transmigrate again to the degraded species among the 8,400,000 forms of life. The Krishna consciousness movement is anxious to serve human society by teaching people to perform devotional service, which can save a human being from being degraded again to animal life. As already stated by Prahlad Maharaj, Bhagavata Dharma consists of Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu, Smaranam Pada Sevanam, Archanam Vandanam, Dasham Sakyam Atmani Vedanam. In all the schools, colleges, and universities, at home and at home, all children and youths should be taught to hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, they should be taught to hear the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, to put them into practice in their lives and thus to become strong in devotional service. Free from fear of being degraded to animal life, following Bhagavata Dharma has been made extremely easy in this age of Kali. The Shastra says, Hare nama, hare nama, eva kevalam, kalao nastyeva, 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 gatir anyata. One need only chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Everyone engaged in the practice of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra will be completely cleansed from the core of his heart and be saved from the cycle of birth and death. So, Sri Parada Uvacha. Kumara acharet prashna. Dharman bhagavataniha dulabham manusham janma tad api adruvam arthadham. The beginning of his instructions, of course, he's talking to his little schoolmates. So he says that one who is has prajna, intelligence or discrimination, should practice Kaumara from the beginning, 5 years old. What should they practice? Dharman Bhagavatan, or Bhagavat Dharma, Krishna consciousness. The occupational duty of the human being. Prabhupada, we use this word dharma. It's a complicated word. I remember the first time I saw the word dharma was in a novel. This is Dharma Bum by Jack Kerouac, The Dharma Bums. It's like a contradiction in terms, huh? Dharma Bums. But I was attracted to the word dharma. I was also attracted to the word bums. And it was a bunch of beatniks, you know, proto-hippies wandering around looking at candles and smoking marijuana, trying to find themselves. That's not dharma. Dharma means, it comes from a Sanskrit word, dri, a root which means to uphold and to sustain. So dharma actually means that by which a thing is what it is, its essence. The dharma of sugar is to be sweet. The dharma of fire is to burn. That's what the kind of essential meaning of the word dharma is. It's translated as religion a lot of times. But people have this idea that religion means a particular historical faith. I'm a Hindu, that's my Hindu. Sometimes you see there's now Hindu dharma, Christian dharma, Jewish dharma. But that's not a dharma, because dharma means if it's your essence, you can't change it. It is your essential nature. So the actual dharma of the living entity is not this or that particular historical faith. But it is to serve the Supreme Lord. Every living entity by nature is constituted as the servant of the Supreme Soul. This is the Dharma. And so when that comes into full realization, we call it Bhagavat Dharma. We actually teach devotional service to Krishna. So that's Bhagavat Dharma. Also you'll see the term Sanatan Dharma. Sanatan means eternal, your real Dharma. Because sometimes the word Dharma is also used to refer to your practices according to varna and ashram, your psychophysical nature. That's called svadharma. It's also called dharma. Because that also one can't change. One has a certain psychophysical nature, and according to that one should act as Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, according to that situation, there's a dharma, a duty to be performed. But that's temporary. That's a svadharma. So contrasted with that is sanatan dharma, dharma that's eternal. That's Bhagavat dharma, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So iha, in this life, Prahlad says, one should be practice, if you're intelligent, dharman bhagavatam, devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Kaumara, from your beginning of your childhood, don't wait. This is going to be his message to his schoolmates. He's preaching to them, little boys. And naturally they'll have so many reasons to say, let's wait till later. But he's saying, don't wait. He says, from your childhood. This is a radical thing too, you should understand. Bhagavat Dharma is disclosed as the highest teaching of the Vedas after many, many births and much trouble. One who was wise actually surrenders to me, Krishna says. And Gyanavan man prapajyate. He's Gyanavan, possesses Jnana. He surrenders to me. So this is the accumulation of studying all the Vedas. By the end of the Vedas, one understands, is to surrender to Krishna. So you have to be Gyanavan. You have to be learned, advanced. And Prahlad is saying, now you're just little kids, but still you can practice. I want you to practice this from your childhood. He says, iha, in this life, and then he says about this life, durlabham manusham janma, that this human birth is difficult to attain. It's rarely attained, so therefore it's valuable. If you consider that every microbe, every clump of grass, every insect is a soul transmigrating. And therefore you make a calculation on this planet, how many living entities there are, and then put the human population next to that figure, you'll see that it's the most exclusive group of souls. Very, very small. The whatever it is, what is it, 2 billion human beings on this planet right now. Very, very small fraction of the number of living entities. So it's durlabham, it's hard to get there, this manusham janma. And what does he say about them? That api adruvam, although it is temporary, arthadham, it can give you the highest value. Arthada means it bestows artha, worthwhile meaning, purpose. Animal life is not arthadam. You don't get much out of it except a few cheap thrills. And then you get eaten up. You get to eat and then somebody gets to eat you. And then it's all over and you go on to the next. You get a particular array of senses and different animal species of life, and you just enjoy the senses, and then you die and go on. It's useless for all practical purposes. There's no significance to it, no meaning to it. The meaning, the significance comes when suddenly you finally are one of the lucky few to make it to the human form of life. Then, because it can bestow this artha, and what is that? You don't have to die anymore. So human life is different. And that's why Prabhupada says, very basic thing we have to teach people. Human life is meant for self-realization and not sense gratification. First thing, people have to understand this. Human life is unique. Because now we are living in a culture of sense gratification. The purpose of human life is to gratify your senses as much as possible. And Prabhupada has revealed that this is animal life. That if all your efforts are going into eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, then we're simply animals. And actually he says worse than animals. Animals don't kill their own children in the womb. But here, even that's happening. They haven't. So people have become lower than animals. So this very rarely attained human form, one gets there, and then even in the womb, one gets killed. It's a disaster. And then one comes out and immediately is taught to be an animal anyway. So this is a frustration of Krishna's purpose. Human life is meant to be the escape hatch from the cycle of birth and death in the material world. It's not arbitrary. It's not something, oh, we can do whatever we want. We can make up any kind of human civilization. Look around you, people say. Don't you see? Look, there's people in China, they live one way, and people in America live another way, and the Kwakutl and the Indians up in the Northwest, they live another way, and the Dobu in the Polynesia live this way, and the Zuni Indians live that way. And everywhere you see, there's so many different cultures and expressions, and each of them have their different goals and aims and beliefs and meanings. So how can you say that human life should be anything? You make it up. You become what you want to do. You want to make a culture where the boys marry the boys and the girls marry the girls? Go ahead, do it. You just make yourself into whatever you want. There's no purpose. There's no meaning. Where do you see? It's all a concoction. This is the philosophy. It's called cultural relativism. People don't know anymore. They find themselves to be human beings, and they don't know what they're here for. It's just some kind of weird thing that all of a sudden I've come to consciousness and I find myself in a certain kind of a body with a group of senses, and I'm kind of thrown in the middle of an ongoing drama with parents and a culture around me. And why am I here? What is it for? No one tells me. It's a kind of stupid thing that I'm here at all. I find myself here and I just go along, gratify my senses, get a job, have a few cheap thrills and die, and that's it. And what's it for? What's it mean? No one has any idea. And no one's there to teach them. Because in the modern world, people have become cut off from the actual tradition of the human race that was actually passed down since time immemorial. There's a standard human civilization. It's called Vedic culture. You can see that the world is not an accident. You can see that, for example, honeybees, they have a civilization. A living entity is born in the body of a bee and it knows what to do. If it's a drone, it does this. If it's a worker, it does this. If it's, they have their different assigned positions. If it's born in the body of a beaver, it knows what to do. If it's born in the body of a tiger, it knows what to do. Its dharma is already there. They're all set up. what they're supposed to do. It's actually the same way for human beings. Just as God established for every 8,400,000 species of life what they're supposed to do, He also established for human beings what they're supposed to do. The thing is, you have to do it consciously and deliberately because this is human life. The animals have no choice. Their programming is hardwired in. It just comes all set and the machine runs and the soul gets carried along. But in human society, you have to get the software. And that software is the Vedic literature. Human society was created by Krishna, a Vedic society, for self-realization. So when the world was created, human society was created, and the book of knowledge was given to human society. Here you are, you're in the human form of life, you're in the universe. Here are these books, this tells you what to do with it. Here's the manual for human life. This is the Vedas. Take it, learn it, and here human society is created in such a way that there's one group of people, the Brahmanas, who are specially intended to understand and teach this Vedas. Krishna says this, Chatran, Varnam, Mayastri, Sham. I created them, these four orders. When he says that statement in Bhagavad Gita, he's telling us, you see, it's not an accident. Human society is established. This Varnashrama system, that's also called Dharma, isn't it? Varnashrama Dharma. That's because it's created by Krishna. It's not arbitrary that human society should be divided Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. So Krishna created the Brahmins. I remember once when I interviewed Srila Prabhupada for Back to Godhead magazine. It was the 200th anniversary of the Constitution of the United States. So we had a discussion about government. It's in that book, Science of Self-Realization. So we were talking about government. So I asked Prabhupada, well, has Krishna created the perfect form of government? He says, yes, Kshatriyas. So there it is. In the same way, he created also Brahmanas. Mayastrisham, they have been produced by me, Krishna says. These four groups of people. So the Brahmanas are there. They're supposed to receive the Vedas, understand it, and guide the rest of society in terms of it so that everyone understands. So that when a child is born, someone says, welcome to the human form of life. Now you have a mission. This human form of life is very valuable. Your mission is self-realization. That if you live your life correctly, you will not have to die again. This Krishna is a business, this human life, so that the universe is here, and so that living entities, when they come to the human form of life, they can get out. That's his system. But now they're not getting out. The exit hatch is closed. Because of Kali Yuga. People, they come to the human form of life and they go back down again. They just don't make it out. Because of not knowing that human life is meant for self-realization. And then from the very early age, they get so imbued with sense gratification and so much addicted to enjoyment and sense gratification that even later on when we try, for self-realization. So hard to overcome the bad habits one has picked up in one's youth. Very, very difficult. If in one's early youth one has gained the habits of sense gratification, then you have to fight all your life. But if you never get them to begin with, then you're in really good shape. So that's why Prahlad is saying, the best thing is you have to start when you're young. Don't contract the habits of sense gratification, bad habits. Once you get bad habits, and especially the younger you get bad habits, the harder it is to uproot them. So this is what human life is for. So people, the whole civilization now, it's a soul-killing civilization. And Prabhupada called the educational institutions slaughterhouses of the young, because their teachers can't save them. No one is supposed to become a teacher, a parent, unless he or she knows how to deliver dependence from death. That's supposed to be the qualification. So the people are not qualified. The whole modern society is cut off from its... This is the tradition. It was handed down, you know, but through the parampara, the cyclic succession. And now Kali Yuga has come. A whole group of false Brahmins have come up. They've rejected the traditions of the past. They say we're going to figure out what this universe is about simply by our scientific knowledge. We're going to just dissect it and analyze it, learn how to control it and make things very nice here for sense gratification. This is demoniac. And those people are in control, and they're destroying human life. So the only fortunate thing is Lord Chaitanya's movement. Prabhupada's intention is that, and it will happen, it's not just Prabhupada's intention, it's Lord Chaitanya's intention, that there'll be, in Kali Yuga, a 10,000 year golden age of Krishna consciousness, which began in 1986. We were here for the beginning, 10,000 years. The first 500 years is called a Sandhya, from Lord Chaitanya's appearance in 1486 to 1986, that first 500 years is a like a prelude to the golden age, a sanja, a dawn. But the actual, this is what the shastras say, the actual 10,000 year golden age of Krishna consciousness began 1986. That's what happened. So in that time, there'll be the opportunity within Kali Yuga for making the most spiritual advancement. Actually, better to be born in Kali Yuga during that 10,000 years than in Satya Yuga anywhere, because of Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Make it possible, easy. Extremely easy in this age of Kali. All one has to do is chant the holy names. So that opportunity doesn't come very often. So our idea, this Krishna consciousness movement that Prabhupada established, was to reform the entire world civilization. And he established ISKCON as an instrument to do that, to train people in Bhagavad Dharma, and gradually those people are to go out and revolutionize material society and destroy it, either the easy way, nice way, or the hard way. But it will it's inevitable, it's going to be destroyed. It's collapse anyway of its own weight. But people have to have an alternative. They have to know that there's something else other than sense gratification, that their self-realization is possible, it's available. That was Prabhupada's ability to convince people in the beginning. Not just some religious philosophy, because people have heard that everywhere, but he was able to convince people that it is possible to become free from the control of material nature. It is possible to directly encounter and deal with the Supreme Personality of Godhead on a daily basis. This is what Prabhupada convince people. Convince people because he was doing it. And because of that, the Krishna Conscious Society is growing and spreading. So this is the business. Human life is meant for self-realization, not for sense gratification. People don't understand how deadly sense gratification is. So Prabhupada describes this, that the senses will destroy one. Like a moth, the sense of sight, it becomes attracted to the bright flame and it comes in and gets crisp like that. Just that one sense that leads him on to become attracted. Or in India, up in the Himalayas, when they hunt the musk deer, the hunter plays a melody on a flute, and the deer hears this sound, and he comes closer and closer and closer. And then when he's within range, the arrow. So that sense drags him. Or the way you capture a bull elephant is you take a female elephant in heat or in rut, and you stake her leg down. Then in front of her you dig a big pit, deep pit, and you cover it over with bamboos, you know, and some leaves. And then, you know, the bull elephant comes charging in for the female and whoop, he's caught. So in this way, the senses, they come attracted to the sense objects, but we don't know that they're deadly. One has to look at sense objects. When one is attracted to them for sense enjoyment, as deadly. Because Krishna said that this, because sense gratification forces us into the bodily conception of life. Death is an illusion, Prabhupada said, that we have imposed upon ourselves due to our desire to enjoy in this world. If we want to engage in the illusion of material enjoyment, we have to suffer the illusion of death. That's what it is. So this sense gratification is deadly. It's what causes death and birth and old age and oldest and disease. All this stuff. It keeps one trapped in the cycle of repeated birth and death in the material world. So anyone who is engaging in systematically cultivating sense gratification and leading people into it like little children is killing them. So he says the children suffer a twofold deadly assault. First in the womb. So if they happen to survive, not being aborted, their parents are engaged in illicit sex, oh, big inconvenience, there's a child, let's kill it so we can keep on going. Then the child manages to get out, then the second assault. Have a good time. Enjoy. I always say that. Enjoy. So in this way, they become destroyed. So Prahlad is now got his demoniac school friends in the classroom. The teachers have gone home. So he's now going to teach them. Everything you're learning is wrong. You're in your tender childhood years. These teachers, Shanda and Amarka, they've been described in the last verse as Dvandva Arama, those people who take delight in duality, sense gratification. They're going to mislead you. Now I'm telling you what you should engage in is Bhagavat Dharma. And that can make, that even though this life is temporary, it can still yield the highest value. It's full of significance and meaning. Okay, questions or comments?
Yeah. Yeah, you were saying yesterday about the success so far, poor and this being the golden age, supposedly the start of the chance to become Krishna conscious, it seems that the prospects of taking the young children now and making them into Krishna conscious devotees is kind of discouraging, you know, to hear what's happened so far. Mm-hmm. What are the prospects for the future?
Well, I think they're pretty good. I think people learn from their mistakes. Gradually, parents will again get more confidence in the Gurukula, and they'll send their children. And also, it's a question of, you can't just create good Gurukulas without creating a Krishna-conscious society. It does not so much good for parents to try to tell their children to be Krishna-conscious, and they don't practice themselves. Of course, it's a natural desire sometimes. I'm not a devotee, but I want you to be a devotee. But what children learn, you know, my parents used to send me to Sunday school when they stayed in bed. I got the message that they didn't really think it was important. If they really thought it was important, they would. So the parents stay in bed and send the children off to Mangalarti with the Gurukula teacher. It's hypocrisy that hurts. But I think in general there's been a loss of faith in many of the institutions in ISKCON, but I see everywhere that it's coming back, and that Krishna consciousness is, people have confidence in Krishna consciousness again. I was talking to Dhanadhar Swami, who runs the Gurukula in Vrindavan, and for the last number of years there have been practically only Indian children there, but now this year more and more people from the West are again sending their children to that Gurukula, and because people have learned, you know, they're now very careful about the quality of the teachers. Now that we have instituted everywhere child abuse prevention programs and so on. So the opportunities for any kind of abuse or hypocrisy in the Gurukulas is lessened. One has to always be on guard against those things, but everybody has learned. I think it's good. You had a...
Are there Gurukulas that separate boys and girls?
Yeah, generally. At least after a certain age, it has to be.
It wasn't like that either.
If they're very young, then they don't. Prabhupada gave instructions on that. If they're very young in the classrooms, they can be together. Gurukula also means ashram. Boys, and they live with the teacher, so then you have girls and boys separate. But if they're young in the classroom, they can be together up to a certain age. I don't remember which age Prabhupada said they should be separated. But if they're 5, 6, 7 years old, it doesn't matter. Bhakti Eric, do you have some?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could give a practical example of how we could explain to someone. A lot of people have the idea that the separation that we make between animal and human species is just another example of cultural relativism. Maybe the animals have their self-realization process, we just can't see it.
Because they can't communicate it to us, maybe even dolphins. It's a fact that animals are more, some animals are very intelligent, and they have maybe some more powers than people expect. Of course, ultimately one goes on the authority of the Vedic literature that self-realization is possible only in human life. If it turns out, I'd be open, if it turns out that you can communicate with dolphins or somebody like that, fine. But the whole thing about dolphins is a little mystical. The ones that people try to communicate with and achieve some success, actually, are monkeys and chimpanzees. They can learn language and there's some communication. And I read some literature on this. It's uncanny that people finally discover that they can communicate with monkeys and form a kind of relationship with monkeys. However, they're low.
And they're humans.
They're humans. By Vedic calculation, the 400,000 human species includes the monkeys. So first of all, they're human beings. But they're so low class that you can't get them, you know, very far along, beyond eating, sleeping, mating, and feeding. So just like you see within human beings, there's some human beings that are just, they're like animals. And their intelligence is very dim, and they can't really learn very much. So actually it says human life, arthadam. Prabhupada says this means civilized human life in Bhagavad Gita. He says uncivilized human life in which people cannot follow regulative principles, he says, is just animal life. So when it says human life here, human birth, it actually means that in a human birth in which you can actually follow regulative principles. So the monkeys are actually human beings, and maybe also bears. I'm not quite sure about this, but I've also heard that bears may be classified within the human species. So it's not unimaginable that you can communicate with them or achieve some kind of understanding among them, but they're low level. We want to see spiritual advancement. So the places where they've actually created communication, that has been with monkeys so far. But it doesn't mean that they seem to be very much capable of spiritual life. And if somehow or other you can get a monkey to eat prasadam, or maybe even hear and chant Hare Krishna, then something, we can save them. I mean, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also was able to do something for animals. We were asked if we should, you know, have a mission to the animals, and Prabhupada said, you know, human beings would be enough for us to handle. He said, don't try to imitate Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So as far as the other things, you have to go by what evidence is there, and the evidence is there that there's some consciousness, yes, that we see. That consciousness is a high level consciousness, that there's no evidence for. It's just simply, again, a kind of relativistic idea. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.